Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Why do you have Auburn winning this game? Just because of weird demigod influence, and he's
Well, there is that. That I just sometimes like making picks because I'm bored.
Right.
I mean, what's the fun of being right?
That's true.
By the numbers, you know, and two, because I think Auburn is the kind of team that. I mean, I think Florida State can overcome some turnovers, but if Auburn decides that they're going to run for 400 yards on you, or for 500 yards on you,
damn, we'll do it.
They can do it. And that's hard to overcome. When you pass, you might throw the ball up and for a couple of interceptions, right?
Yeah.
When you run, that fumble, they're really good at not turning the ball over like that.
Yeah. One of the things that was sort of struck me as interesting, and Bud's been saying this for a long time, Bud Elliott from Tomahawk Nation, is Florida State's really good if you try to spread them out and Florida State can just, like, go to their nickel. Because they've got tons of fast dudes who make tackles in open spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And they're almost built to do that. Because that's, I mean, really, that's the type of guy you're getting from Florida. That, like, hyper-athletic,
yeah.
Go sideline to sideline like crazy. And when you, like, look at the defensive linemen they have, they're not all, like, from, like, Eddie Goldman's from, I think, D.C. Somebody else from somewhere, whatever it is. He was sort of like, if somebody can, like, run power against Florida State, like, they don't have huge, like, Penn State-type run-stopping linebackers. And Auburn can run between the tackles really well if they want to. If, like, because they have really strong offensive linemen. I think one of their guards and Greg Robinson, their left tackle, are, like, spectacularly All-American level good.
Best defensive line in the SEC this year is Missouri.
Yeah, and they embarrass them.
Yeah.
And Auburn's really good at plugging role players in. They've got three backs that they can use, and depends where the game's going. They can run up the middle, they can run around the side, they can do some stuff out of the slot with motion. They're good at that.
Yeah, and I think running outside is going to be really tough on Florida State. But if you start running straight, like A gap, B gap stuff, and it starts working,
that opens up so much more.
Bud seems to think that if there's a vulnerability there on that defense, it's like, if you just, all you're trying to do is push them backwards 4 yards, like, it can be done.
A key element in that is Jay Prosh.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Somebody told us, I don't even remember who, in terms of, like, it might have even, I don't know if it was Bud, whoever it was, maybe it was Barrett, was just saying, in terms of versatility and move him around and ability to do a lot of things well,
yeah.
It was Prosh.
He's a big, mean blocker that they can put on somebody on the inside if they need to. And they've been doing a lot of stuff with arc blocks to sort of counter that. If you're going to double up on the zone read, they've had somebody whamming, coming around on an arc block.
Right.
Chris Brown wrote about on Grantland.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to deal with, and an undersized linebacker is going to get pancaked if they try to do that.
I think that's, and I don't even think that's talk into Auburn. Like, that's a reality that Auburn can do. I don't know if that means they can win the game, but that's like a reality that they are going to have some success doing.
Also, if they can't block a dude on the line, just read them.
Yeah. And do it better than Chip Kelly did against Nick Fairley.
Can I switch it up slightly?
You may.
All right. Getting away from the national championship, which of the teams in bowl season has most impressed you that you didn't think you were going to be, that you thought they did a lot of things well that you just weren't expecting?
UCF
was like the first.
Yeah.
Just because they ended their, I mean, the Rutgers and USF games are so just like underwhelming, and they were good on defense, but like the offense was just like shut down, and all of a sudden, I mean, Baylor's good defense like all year long, even against like the better part of their schedule, the defense was still really good, except I guess Oklahoma State, but UCF, especially because people were like, well, I guess we got to give this spot to UCF in the BCS game, and then they just came out and just shit kicked Baylor.
It wasn't even so much defensively. I thought they were pretty good defensively.
Yeah.
Baylor still scored 42.
Yeah.
Offensively, it was astonishing what they were able to do against them.
Yeah.
They ran the ball more, I think, than Baylor expected.
Daylights out of it.
They ran it effectively to start. Baylor started to pick up on things as the game wore on, and then they did it again down the stretch, and they had a 10-point win in a game where they were a double-digit underdog.
Also, I was impressed with Clemson. I mean, I know that's...
Yeah.
they could have easily, just after the Florida State loss, you know, completely just packed in the season, and they did not. And by the way, we're very Clemson-y. Like, they tried to give the game to Ohio State and mm-hmm. just took it right back.
Yep.
Literally. Pick.
I would go with Michigan State.
Oh. Yeah. God, that was impressive.
Maybe are they the most impressive team above replacement Michigan State, like, on the year, like, from 12 to 13?
Yeah.
Yes.
Because they were, the improvement, and even over the year in Connor Cook was just breathtaking.
What I thought was so impressive about Michigan State was they did, you know, we all sort of knew what the tough matchup was going to be. They were sort of strength on strength. They won that.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also did a bunch of other things well that you sort of assumed were their weaknesses.
Yeah.
Like, you thought, well, it's kind of a one-dimensional offense. And,
right.
You know, when they couldn't get the rush game going in ways they wanted to, they found ways to move the ball.
Mm-hmm.
They found, and quite honestly,
which is
honestly,
what they actually did against Ohio State, too.
They especially did. In that they second did, half. But that said, Stanford's defense is a lot better than Ohio State's. And I really thought the game plan Mark D'Antonio and that coaching staff came out with was very impressive, especially against, it's very rare that you see a Stanford team in the last 3-4 years be like, oh, they kind of got out-coached.
Oh, they got thoroughly out-coached.
Yeah, and that's just,
Stanford had a good first quarter, and then Narduzzi adjusted, and the offensive staff adjusted, and it was like, Michigan State's very clearly the superior league coach.
You could
team.
Feel the momentum change in that game.
Yeah, and it was just impressive to me that they put so many pieces together on a stage like that where, you know, if Stanford had won that game by 10 points, mm-hmm. I don't think anybody would have said, oh, well, Michigan State's, you know, overrated and shouldn't have been there in the first place. It would have been respectable.
You want to talk about Auburn as a team that clearly improved under Gus Malzahn, but certainly in season from start to finish.
Mm-hmm.
Michigan State's right up there,
yeah.
especially when you start looking at what Connor Cook did. You know, I talked to Dan.
Yep.
When we did our previous show, Connor Cook played his best two games of the season, two biggest games of the season, two last games.
This is a team that had trouble with Western Michigan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a team that had trouble with USF.
They almost went 14 against Purdue, too. Like, yeah,
it was ugly.
Yeah,
yeah, and really ugly. And to start if the year. You go back to last year, remember last year they had trouble. They had trouble getting past the 50. So
they were a disaster on offense last
year. That bowl game, they barely moved. I mean, granted they're playing TCU, but yeah, they. I don't know if they'll. We'll see if they turn out to be the West Virginia of the postseason. Mm-hmm. But it's hard not to look at that team and say they're really putting a lot together in very impressive fashion.
I was impressed with, and I was impressed with them all season long, but the sort of bottom half of the Pac-12 in bowl season, I think they were all favored, so it's not too extreme, but Arizona made work of Boston College. Mm-hmm. These were two teams that didn't have, like, dissimilar seasons. Washington, with, like, three coaches, made work of BYU.
USC looked great in their bowl game.
USC looks fantastic.
Yeah. In a spot where I think nobody would have been surprised if they just
motivation
gave
was
up.
Very much in question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
UCLA, I mean, granted, they knocked Logan Thomas out of the game really early, but they embarrassed that Virginia Tech defense.
By the way, one of the scarier teams in the nation in terms of what they did in the third and the fourth quarter against anyone.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
They got so heavy and so nasty in the fourth.
Yes, they did. Oregon State comes out. I mean, I'm not a huge believer in 2013 Boise State, but Oregon State looks good, especially after losing, like, their last however many games.
Yeah.
Am I forgetting somebody? I don't even know.
I don't know. Well,
and Wazoo choked the thing away.
Wazoo with probably the worst collapse of the entire
bowl.
The entire, well, the worst late collapse, as opposed to the thorough four-quarter collapse of a team.
Right. Sorry, Chiefs fans.
Yes. Sorry, Chiefs fans.
One team we're forgetting here, Oklahoma.
Oklahoma.
Big King Bob.
Yeah. You know, and what really impressed me.
Are we cutting this into, like, five different shows, by the way?
I don't know. What really impressed me about Oklahoma was all season long I've been reading on Oklahoma sites about how Trevor Knight would give them a different dynamic. And we saw flashes throughout the course of the year, but he never could really put it all together. Now, I don't know if the Sugar Bowl was a fluke, but he clearly gave them something and clearly looked a level above what we were accustomed to seeing.
And by the way, like, punching Alabama where it hurt.
Yeah.
Like, where they had obvious gaping weaknesses, like corner.
Yeah.
Going right after. And that's become, by the way, there's no fear of those corners because everyone who has a wide receiver who's over 6'2"
throws all over them.
They throw all over them. And it's not like you can do that without running. Oklahoma's line did a great job dominating late in that game, and I don't want to take that away from them. But that's becoming a pattern against Alabama. And they're going to have to change. I mean, I'm sure Nick Saban has already, of course, countered and has built several football robots for this purpose. But, you know, they were cut up by A&M against really big receivers like Mike Evans. Oklahoma was able to dominate them. Well,
Ole Miss was the only sort of wide receiver school that they didn't have any problems
with. LSU had their moments.
This is more about Bo Wallace.
Yeah, this is more about Doc Bo had a bad day in the OR against them. But yeah, that's Oklahoma had from soup to nuts was fantastic against them.
Auburn threw on them.
Yeah.
When they needed to. Yeah.
The other
thing, it was like 11 throws. But
the other thing about that Oklahoma game, there was definitely a point. Either I want to say maybe late in the third, early in the fourth quarter, where Alabama starts to cut the lead, and you almost get that feeling. Okay, this is when Alabama's going to be Alabama.
Yes.
They're going to take
control.
We
looked up what the odds would be at halftime for Alabama to come back and win. Yeah,
and Oklahoma stood in there. They didn't, and that's where they didn't panic. They kept doing what was working, and they didn't get away from it. And I don't know. I don't know if Oklahoma will play that way next year consistently. But if they do, that's going to be a really dangerous team.
And Alabama, people are like, well, we gave them 5 turnovers. But
they got 5 turnovers.
You saw A.J. McCarron running for his life.
Yep. He was sacked 7 times.
Quanjo.
Their offensive line was caved.
Yeah.
Most of the game.
It wasn't the kind of game we saw a couple years ago in the Sugar Bowl, where Bama went out there totally uninspired against Utah and lost.
I mean,
they wanted to play the game. They were trying to win the game.
Yep.
Yeah.
And Oklahoma just flat out beat them.
If Alabama becomes a school that has serious pass protection problems and can't put the corners on islands, what the hell are they?
Well, they're going to be swamped over by the bleed over of the Big 12 in the best possible way into the SEC, which that's the weird thing. The SEC West has kind of become like a little sort of mutant off-break of the Big 12 in terms of spread offenses that like to throw the ball with big receivers against SEC corners.
And Alabama did that a little bit in that game, too.
They did, but, you know, the other thing, too, down the stretch that was really weird in that game, and this is less about crediting Oklahoma, because they weren't the ones who only gave Derrick Henry 8 carries.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that one wanted him.
What was your tweet you had about Derrick Henry with the deer antlers?
Oh, I said deers are using Derrick Henry extract to grow their antlers larger.
Yeah, I mean, it's just not a normal-sized human being.
I think it's just deer, not deer.
Or moving that fast, or even with a normal, even his hairline looks kind of unnatural.
Well, it's kind of unnatural.
Yeah.
He's almost wearing a weave.
He looks like a 32-year-old man.
Yes.
And he runs like
Bowser.
Yeah. That's actually the right comparison.
But that's the other thing with Alabama is that when you're that pro style or when you're that methodical, like you see this a lot in college. If something gets hot, you call the same play. Jimbo Fisher talked about versus Duke that they called the same play like 9 times in a row because they only needed one play.
Why would you change something that works?
I don't understand. So what Alabama did was they had a game plan and they stuck with it, which normally we salute. But if your game plan has an obvious thing that is getting you 20 yards a carry,
especially when other parts of it are not working.
Oh, to the tune of like 37 attempts and 7 sacks.
Right.
And multiple turnovers. So you think you might want to just go ahead and give it to that giant dude, even though that's not what the game plan called for.
To be fair, Doug Nussmeier has Washington stink on him. To be fair.
Yeah. Which for the first time became aerosolized and spread over a general, noticeable area in this game. Because I think prior people have been like, oh, man, that's just Alabama fans being insane.
Right.
Yeah, you know, not getting the ball to the back.
Watching
score.
That, yeah.
Of course, then, an Alabama mob dove into a crowd and started punching and kicking strangers. So,
yes.
They're still insane.
There's, you know what?
That hasn't changed.
She felt justified in that.
Man.
Yeah.
Mama's just protecting the Cubs.
There is no court in Alabama. Keeping her locked up.
That is, there just aren't courts.
You should have taken those rotten toothless Okies to jail. Sent them to California. It's where they want to be anyway.
I find you guilty of no class.
I'll show you the grapes of wrath.
They haven't read that book.
They're referring to Grapes of Wrath, a vineyard 15 miles north of Birmingham.
It's a warrior.
Where only the famous Muscadine wines are made.
You ever had three-month-old warrior wine? Yeah.
It's practically paint thinner.
Kidding. I think warrior's in a dry county. I know a lot about Alabama.
The other teams who are, like, most disappointing this season in terms of their performance, Ohio State's defense is just abysmal. Baylor's collapse. You're like, okay, Baylor's defense obviously just reverted. I'm not particularly shocked or surprised by that. And I wasn't particularly shocked or surprised by Ohio State's defense being bad, but bad to that degree, and for Braxton Miller to be so unsteady down the stretch.
Yeah.
You know, like, the only guy in that game who you looked at and go, well, you knew exactly what you're doing is Carlos Hyde.
Yes.
That's it. Everyone else was kind of suspect.
And they had a good offensive line-ish.
Yeah, well, they were good on run blocking.
Yeah.
Fairly good on pass blocking. And then everyone else was just kind of out there.
So I was really disappointed in Ohio State. I wasn't very impressed by what they did. I was really, like, Georgia was just, I know they had a lot of holes and a lot of injuries, but Georgia's performance against Nebraska was abysmal.
I will throw Miami in that group as well. Like, I'm not surprised Louisville won, and I'm not surprised Louisville won comfortably.
It was, they had close games at the end of the season.
Miami almost didn't score offensive points in that game.
They weren't in that game at all.
Never. And, you know, that was legitimately shocking to me. And maybe that was just Louisville really wanted to prove to everybody that they weren't this overrated team that didn't play anybody, and Miami just didn't care one way or the other. But I don't know. Miami is a team that from the start of the year to the end, granted they had some injury problems at some key spots, it was very hard to say, oh, that's a team that got better.
Yeah, another team that basically is in the exact same situation against an opponent, which I fear is inferior. Michigan.
Yeah,
I was going to say Michigan.
Man.
Yeah.
I mean, not...
Secretly
never
danger.
Never in that game. Never. Kansas State up 21-6, I think, at the half.
Mm-hmm.
Never really a contest.
Yeah, it was so weird to look at that game and say, well, the score is still within distance, but play call wise, you never felt like, oh, Michigan is just one big play. They were like, you're not going to get a big play.
And it'd be really convenient to say, oh, well, they started Shane Morris. Shane Morris didn't look bad in that game.
He looked terrible.
No, it wasn't Shane Morris's fault that they only scored 14 points against
him. No, he had a good game.
Yeah.
He actually looked like he knew what he was doing out there. Which is even more of a compliment when you consider what Al Borges has done this year.
Maybe an upgrade.
An upgrade, yeah.
Shane Morris I don't know who the best receiver is in the Big Ten, but Jeremy Gallen's certainly around there. With the number one running back recruit who showed up 144 pounds overweight, Derek Green.
It happens
to the best of us.
Yeah.
And their defense, not terrible. Michigan's defense, wasn't bad all year.
But it was very hard to point to, oh, that's what they can lean on defense.
Right, no, it wasn't we're a defensive team that can do enough things on offense to win. They couldn't do enough things on offense to win for most of the season. And the defense, it was fine. And for Michigan to, not be very good at something, especially with this is year three of a coach that everybody seems to love, that's very weird.
Yeah, I was not particularly surprised by this, but still very disappointing to see LSU just a lackluster. Do you even remember LSU playing a bowl game?
No.
That's how nondescript and lackluster their performance was.
There weren't a lot of bowl games where, I think looking back, you say that was an uninspired effort. And we see a lot of those every year, but this bowl game, to me, reeked of that.
I will give you another one. That's the Pinstripe Bowl.
The Pinstripe Bowl.
Oh.
Who played in that game?
Was that the worst viewing?
I was really bad.
It was pretty rough.
I said on Twitter
Mississippi
that
Mississippi Rice was pretty bad, but
The Pinstripe Bowl had the aura of a game that, you know, you weren't in the house and you recorded it on the DVR and then watched it later. Watching that game, there was no intensity, there was no emotion, no excitement. You didn't even care who won. No one really won. Both teams lost. It was just really hard to watch. No one came away with that game with a whole lot of positive emotion.
Mm-hmm. And you didn't feel like you learned anything about either team going forward, because we know Notre Dame's going to look very different next year, especially on offense.
Yeah. Right.
And Rutgers, I don't know, might be worse than that next year.
But they'll be in the Big Ten.
So what will that mean? No one knows. No one knows a darn thing.
It means you get an AP Latin credit.
Yeah, that's... and some bound leather books. Mm. But yeah, I think that does it for the teams I'm completely disappointed in.
Still bummed about Stanford. I just wanted...
There was a play there, though. Like, if you want to know how hard they got their ass kicked in that game.
Yeah.
That 4th-and-1.
Yeah.
Right, no.
Where Stanford does the thing that they are doing because they say you cannot stop it.
Right.
And Michigan State...
stopped it easily.
A man literally throws himself into another man's face over the line.
Their backup middle linebacker outsmarted Stanford, saying, they're going to go low, so I'm going to go high, mm-hmm. and stopped it.
Yeah. Went over like a cannon.
It wasn't the physicality. That Michigan State was able to compete physically with Stanford, because they did it all year. They allowed like 6 feet a rush. It's like 2 yards. And the thing was that David Shaw, and Stanford wasn't great all year in the second halves of games. They almost gave away a bunch. But that David Shaw had a very, very limited faith in Kevin Hogan to do anything. A quarterback who took this team to the second straight Rose Bowl, and that on 3rd-and-2, 4th-and-1, even just like on regular 2nd-and-4s and like 1st-and-10s in the fourth quarter, was like, well, I'm gonna run a wildcat with Tyler Gaffney for 3 yards. I'm gonna run it. I'm gonna hand it to my fullback for 2 yards. Like, there was no creativity at all.
It kind of
from a guy who gave a TED talk.
It kind of reminded me of watching a stubborn dad try to parallel park in a spot that he clearly won't fit in.
Yeah, no, it's...
like, he's on try 18. Yeah. Just like, Dad, let's just...
You're not...
I see a spot, just... No!
You're not getting a Ford Escape into this spot.
Just a second. Hold on, honey. Damn it, get out!
Turn the radio off!
Well, I'll throw
one... I'd expect that from Brady Hoke and Al Borges.
We will have a nice brunch. Yeah.
But not Shaw.
I'll throw one more team out there, and again, I don't know how long this is running, but... how about ASU?
Ooh, yeah, they laid an egg. The annual Pac-12 Holiday Bowl doesn't want to be their egg.
That was a big one. And
against a team that really, seriously, we're not talking about a team that's just like a little bit less talented than they are.
They're a lot less
talented.
They were huge underdogs. And I remember when we previewed the game on one of our podcasts, we're like, yeah, we don't know how this game's really going to be close. It felt like the kind of game, especially with all the momentum that ASU had. Now, granted, they lost to Stanford in the Pac-12 game, but still, they had a lot of momentum down the stretch. To come out and lay an egg like that was really disappointing.
Yeah, so disappointing. I think Texas Tech was giving up like 50 points a game, like since late September or something
That was really disappointing.
And it's the degree of disappointment and the shade of disappointment that they got beat up by the defense.
Yeah,
yeah.
But Texas Tech
did
nothing. Did absolutely, and had a chance to like get back in that game and still got the door shut on them.
Mm-hmm.
So. In other words, nothing we wouldn't expect from Todd Graham. Like really, we're kind of like waiting for that moment where you're like, oh, yeah, he's going to flip this house. So my analogy for Todd Graham, best house flipper in all of college football. And it kind of felt like that in that game, you know?
Yeah.
Let's put some drywall up. They don't need to know what died here.
Drywall solves everything. Playing a bunch of Japanese maples in the front yard.
That's travertine.
Yeah,
it's everywhere.
Travertine. Did someone die in this house?
That's a travertine driveway. Be quiet.
are those glass bricks up to code? The inspections are tough. They're hard.
Codes are for Democrats.
Yeah. Was someone murdered in this house?
Everyone dies somewhere, Steve.
If you don't get picky about that, whole earth's contaminated. Don't buy a house from Todd Graham.
Don't buy it.
Ran.
I think the first hot tub I ever went in, it was in Knoxville.
Mm-hmm.
At the World's Fair.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
With how many other people?
See,
me and my dad.
So okay. So you've been in a SunSphere hot tub.
I have been in a SunSphere hot tub, and I found out that if you block the jets, you could make a jet of water shoot up.
Yes.
That was pretty cool.
That is science.
And then I was walking by, and this scary lady who was something exotic called Black walked by, and she had a boombox, and I hit it at the exact same time, and the water shot up into the boombox, and that was the first time I ever got called a little faggot cracker.
Oh, okay.
And that lady?
That's what I remember.
No, that lady?
Yeah.
Felicia Rashad.
Oh. Felicia Rashad.
Full circle.
Going right back to it.
Yeah. New Minnesota head coach. Felicia Rashad.
I have no regrets about that, too, because I remember I had made my dad do it, and I was like, man, there's nothing more awkward for my dad than trying to interact with somebody who's vaguely different from them. Especially in defense of his idiot son, who's like, I just ruined your boombox.
How old were you?
Oh, I was 8.
You owe me 18D batteries.
Yeah, exactly. 18D batteries and a Dougie Fresh tape. That's 84. It's probably a new edition.
All right. Oh, wow.
I'm pruning a little bit.
Oh, yeah. A little bit of that going on.
Yeah.
But not overheating, like occasionally retirees in Arizona will do.
So yeah.
Go out and get drunk, sit in the hot tub in the middle of the Arizona desert, and they come in, there's like two pieces of like happy jerky. Just dead. Just put
just
it back.
Slip.
It didn't fall out, it just migrated.
Slipped pancreas.
It's a wandering pancreas. You never heard of that?
I thought that was a band.
This view is incredible.
Right? It's a nice view. Got a mountain, got some stars. See the valley? Sometimes.
Are you sure this isn't the house that they filmed the opening of Commando in?
Or the end.
Yeah, or the end. True.
A little bit of both.
Almost positive.
I mean, Alyssa Milano does live in the area.
I think I've been told she does.
So, kind of all comes together.
Super fat Alyssa Milano now.
Dan.
Because she's had a baby. Like, they're like, Papa says, oh my god, she's so gross. And they're like, she had a baby a week ago.
Her father is Dan Hedaya, so.
Yeah, that's true.
At all.
Oh my god, who is Dan Hedaya?
Clueless father.
The father in Clueless.
Is that Alyssa Milano's dad?
No, because.
Okay.
Whew.
But he's in Commando, is he not? I don't think I made that up.
Yeah, he's the overvillain.
Right,
he's
right.
Not the
okay.
He's not the antagonist.
No.
He's Shadow Organization.
Yeah.
Villain.
He's certainly not the weird Aussie dude.
Yeah, he's not the weird. He's not Bennett. That's awesome, Steve.
Ty beat Spencer, and we should actually conclude this with Spencer. We've done sort of trivia with Ryan, but not really. He's been sort of a lifeline.
Yeah.
Is there any trivia, Ty, that you feel like we should close this out on? Everybody else got trivia.
Everybody else got out trivia, yeah.
Yeah.
We just did, also, full disclosure, we also just did about 53 minutes of trivia with them without mics rolling.
It's right. Right.
On 1993,
fun.
Yeah. Just for fun.
This has just been a long-running quiz show.
Yeah.
In our time, we could come up with some questions.
No, the solid verbal is nothing if not a means for me to eventually become a game show host.
What are your strengths?
I have no weaknesses.
You have no weaknesses. How are you with geography?
I have many weaknesses.
All right, a physical challenge. Tennis court.
Joe Rubenstein.
Oh, great. Yeah.
About 8 hours.
Yeah.
Right.
My strengths are, I have no weaknesses. Except, you know my weaknesses. My weaknesses are TV after 1998.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's about it.
See, the problem is, when we were doing these, we would bring up, or as Jesse Palmer would say, we'd dial up some websites.
Sure.
Yeah, you're gonna have to go off the cuff here.
Yeah, we'd pin our ears back.
That's fine.
All right, who wants a good geography question?
I'm there. I'm a roll.
What is the fourth most populous country in the world?
Fourth.
Mm. It's a very John Boyce question. Who is the ninth greatest astro of all time?
Yeah, is this a John Boyce question in that there is no actual objective answer?
It's
an opinion.
So if I'm counting backwards, there's China and India. And then there's... You know, it's like, who the hell's third? I'll say the fourth most populous nation. This is difficult because now I'm going through every single country and sort of weighing it.
I'll tell you that third is the United States.
I'm going to go on a really crazy answer here. Like a weird-ass answer. Nigeria?
Nigeria is in the top 10.
I knew they were, like,
I believe they might be ninth.
They're way higher up. It's not Japan, is it?
The answer is Indonesia.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Damn, Indonesia's huge.
They're packed. I was going to say Rhythm Nation.
Rhythm Nation?
Yeah.
Another
That's
sleeper.
That's a better answer than mine.
Well, we are a part of the Rhythm
Another Nation. Sleeper in the top 10. I believe you that eight is Bangladesh.
Yeah, because... Yeah. Yeah, well,
yeah, a lot of folks on top.
A lot of people. Right, yeah. A very small, yeah. Shitty space.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a good one.
Are we staking with geography, or just doing any sort of knowledge at all?
Pot luck.
Just throw it around. Potpourri. Okay.
Potent potables.
Potent potables.
All right. What are these two things? These two things are a something. They have...
Go ahead. Okay. I get where you're going.
Hollyhocks and forget-me-nots are what?
Flowers?
Correct. That was directed at Mr. Hot Tub.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's okay, but they are flowers.
You are a man without honor. Yes, Norm MacDonald.
Would you have known that?
Burt Reynolds.
It's a funny name.
Turd Ferguson.
Yeah, it's a good name.
Yeah, I would have known it from Forget Me Nots,
right.
Not Hollyhocks, if I'm being honest.
All right. What was the name of the fifth, who is considered, what was the name of a Beatle who was kicked out of the Beatles?
Yeah, I don't actually
before
know
they
Pete Best.
Correct. Name. And what was the solo album that he released called that was super misleading?
That was it. The Best of the Best of the Beatles, yeah. A brilliant, brilliant name. Best of the Beatles. This is a new trivia question.
Okay. Oh, so we're going circle of
trim. Turnabout.
Oh yeah, no, I can turn this around.
I love circle of trim.
Who has the lowest selling since Billboard began recording? Sales. Who has the lowest selling, highest selling album of the year?
Ooh.
The top album of that year.
The lowest
and the
yearly
lowest
number
of
one.
Any.
Like the most measly sales for the number one album of any year.
Ooh. Ooh. Fleetwood Mac's Rumors.
Paula Cole.
I don't know. Fleetwood Mac's Rumors is like the number one album of all
ever,
time.
Yeah. Yes. Like there's actually like a copy in this pool somewhere.
You would think it would actually have to be recent because album sales
true,
are what single
off.
Sales are.
Dan Rubenstein is not wrong.
Okay.
So I would say, what has been recent?
Pitbull.
A Taylor Swift album.
Hey, you're not totally far off. Justin Timberlake's.
Okay.
I believe it's called Future Sounds.
Yeah.
The last album.
And Future Sex Love Sounds?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It had the lowest sales.
That was Sexy Back?
No, this year's. I'm sorry. The last one.
Oh, that's the 2020 experience?
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry. The 2020 experience had the lowest sales of any best-selling album ever.
Yeah. All right. I feel like I got to that answer, sort of.
What movie soundtrack has sold the most copies? And this is the soundtrack, not, just movie.
The score.
Right.
So it's songs inspired by the movie and or featured in the movie.
Correct.
Most? Space Jam?
Incorrect.
Lion King?
Incorrect.
The Bodyguard?
Incorrect.
Hmm. Footloose?
Incorrect.
I'm going to go back to Space Jam. because I can't possibly believe that it's
Forrest Gump.
Oh, yeah, because it's a compilation of, like, huge. Yeah, I own that. Whatever.
What gift...
Magi.
Close. What gift typically given as a 10th wedding anniversary is also the name of a country?
Chad. Give the gift of Chad.
It's also the name of a country.
Easter.
It's also the name of Djibouti.
China is correct.
Djibouti.
Djibouti is technically also correct.
That is a Hall family
it's
tradition.
It's a gift in a country.
All right.
What Western African nation was once known as the Upper Volta?
The what?
The Upper Volta.
Upper Volta. Côte d'Ivoire.
No.
I'm trying to just think of Upper Western.
nations.
Western African nation, once known as Upper Volta. Not those bastards in Lower Volta.
Mars Volta.
Senegal.
No. I have no idea.
The correct answer is Burkina Faso.
Mm. Of course.
With the capital of Ouagadougou.
Yeah. I almost went there for college.
Well, you know, Eugene's not that much different.
No, it's not. Sister cities. All right. Let's go with something good.
Okay. I'm going to direct this at Mr. Rubenstein.
All right. Yep.
Let me... All right, I want to make sure I have this right in my head first. Mm-hmm. Name, in order, the first four species of dinosaur that they encounter in Jurassic Park.
Whoosh.
Nope.
I haven't seen the movie in a long time. Right, just like random clips.
I would let Spencer or Ty answer this as well if they feel confident.
First one would be...
Hadasaurus?
Incorrect.
First one was the Velociraptor hatching out of
Incorrect.
An egg. No. The first one they encounter would it's be those stampeding little bastards, right?
Incorrect.
No. Well, then you roll on them.
The Brachiosaur.
Okay, so they see the Brachiosaur.
That's when they first learn that they are on an island full of dinosaurs.
Then they see the running little bastards, right?
No. Then they see the Velociraptor hatching.
They bred raptors.
Right. They go to see more raptors. Then they get in their vehicles.
T-Rex?
No.
No, they
They see the Triceratops.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then they see the T-Rex on their way back. Stampede does not...
That's later, yeah. Yeah,
that's way late. Yeah.
Okay.
Would you accept Sir Richard Attenborough?
Yes.
What was FDR's job before...
President.
Winner!
Before he was president.
Secretary of the Navy.
That is correct.
Wow.
Spencer's a former Secretary of the Navy himself.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
He is.
I like that we used to have a Secretary of War.
Was he full Secretary or was he Assistant Secretary of the Navy?
I think he was Secretary of the Navy.
Full? Okay.
I don't think he had a half measure on that.
Okay.
It wasn't like walking. He wasn't half into it.
Oh, you know? Right.
I can say that because I've been to his house in Warm Springs, Georgia.
That's fine.
Whose assassination probably most directly led to World War One?
The Archduke Franz Ferdinand.
The unkillable man.
Yeah.
I like The Onion. Have you ever read The Onion's historical articles on him? It's like, I am the world's most unkillable man. It was like, nothing can stop Archduke Franz Ferdinand from dominating life as the most blessed human being on the planet. And he was like, no one has more fun than I do. If only someone would come and put a bullet in my head just to stop me from having more fun.
What was the treaty that ended World War One?
I believe...
Treaty of Versailles.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of it. Historically, what is the only country that actually is currently up to date on its UN dues? There's one country that is always up to date, like, and has been over the past... Over the history of the UN has been the only one to pay on time every year. It's a weird one.
Liechtenstein.
No, but that's a really good guess.
Luxembourg.
No, another good guess. No.
Switzerland.
Finland.
Mm.
Apparently they're just sitting there in the cold in the dark, like, writing checks.
The bill is due.
Although Finland's dues for the UN have to be like $80, right?
In herring.
Yeah.
I just felt like Scandinavia.
Pay them in kipper.
Yeah.
They do, generally.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of a good one here. What? Approximately how many people live in Canada?
Oh.
Approximately? Oh, it's like not even the population of California.
50 million?
50 million?
Is this Price is Right style?
We'll do Price is Right style.
Ooh.
Okay. Just general close.
Dan
not
Rubenstein
going
says
over.
50 million.
$50 million?
I'm going to go 55.
55?
1 million. One person. One person.
33 million.
One person! I win Canada now, right?
You win Canada, damn it. You gave him
all
Canada.
The Maple Leafs. You can.
Do you know what he's going to do with it?
Yeah, but the taxes on Canada, oof.
So I'm gonna put some taxes on you, bitch.
Oh, man. I wish I had just won a Hyundai.
This is more just an interesting one that you can't really get right.
Okay.
What were H.G. Wells' last words?
I wrote the time.
Get away from me, I'm fine. You know what Millard Fillmore's last ones were? This nourishment is palatable. That's my favorite one ever. This nourishment is palatable. Oh, I know what Roald Dahl's last words were.
Mm-hmm. Ow, fuck! I don't think I can top that question.
Well, the last words of some people are... the woman who... oh, God, what was her name? Dancer. Isadora Duncan. Like, big dancer. Dramatic. Big. Like, passionate woman. Had a lot of lovers, had a lot of drama. And she was... driving off with a very long scarf in a roadster outside of Paris, mm-hmm. like leaving a mansion of someone I'm sure she was in love with, and she looks at the people she's living and goes, farewell, my friends, I go to glory. And she hit the accelerator, and the scarf got caught in the axle and snapped her neck, and she died. That's how Isadora Duncan died.
Since Olympics will be coming up soon,
ooh, yes. Ooh.
What was the last year? This is a two-part question.
Mm-hmm.
The last year in which both the Winter and Summer Olympics were held in the same year.
1992. Albertville and Barcelona.
That was going to be part two.
Mm. Barcelona.
Damn it.
Damn it.
I always get medal count questions wrong because I can't remember 6 from 5. Yeah.
English major.
Damn it.
Don't know there's so many Sylvia Plath questions now, no. Do you?
No. It turns out that you took a goddamn course in Sylvia Plath.
There's only one real interesting fact about her, and it starts with O and ends with oven.
Aw. Come on.
Oven?
Yeah. Oven? Yeah.
It's starts with O and ends in oven.
It's Dutch for oven.
Yeah.
Dutch oven's really a misnomer.